Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
The following is a Hoop Bowl presentation.
Welcome in. It's the Hoop Bowl Lakers podcast, as usual, with your main man, Ethan Noroff, and his right-hand man. He is JC DeLeon. JC, by the skin of their ass, the Lakers come out victorious over the Boston Celtics in a classic rivalry game. We'll get into your thoughts about it, but did you just let out like a big exhale after that was over, kind of like I did, and I was just like, oh my God, finally.
I did. Kind of my one reaction, I texted to you. You didn't see it until, because you were catching up on the game, but like my only simple reaction once the game was over, I was just like, what a dumb, weird win. Like, I'm happy that they won, obviously, but it was just weird how it ended, and it's just kind of a weird game overall.
Very anticlimactic ending for what was mostly a back and forth game throughout. Obviously, one of the things, we'll get right into it, because one of the things that, you know, that has been the talk of the town is THT returns to the rotation in favor of what looks like both Markieff Morris and Wes Matthews sat down on the bench. Now, we've seen that from Wes Matthews before, right? There have been times where he's picked up the DMP CD earlier in the season, so not totally unheard of there. But Markieff Morris, it happened to him once earlier in the year, but it's happening a little bit more now. And so do we think that this is sort of A, do we think THT's playing time continues? And B, do either of those two guys get back into the rotation? And if so, who do you think is more important to sort of get in a rhythm and get going?
Well, there's actually been some evidence that Markieff Morris is a really important part of this team defensively, despite the fact that he's kind of undersized. And so, yeah, I think once he finds the minutes again, I think everything will kind of even out, and they'll see the impact that he's got defensively on this team overall.
I think for me, it's easier to sort of justify, for lack of a better word, despite the fact that Wes Matthews is making a little bit more money than Markieff Morris, I think it's easier to justify sitting him if KCP and THT and Caruso and Schroeder, obviously, all that other guard depth is playing well. And I think with Keith, you know, the thing is for him, I think he'll find his way get back. But Montrez, except for that little sort of dry patch he went through very early in the season, has been a lot better. And as Frank Vogel says, the Lakers are just so deep. He can only play so many guys. It's hard for him to play 10, 11 guys on any given night. You know, 9, maybe 10 sounds about right. But keep the focus on THT here, because it feels like his playing time is kind of here to stay. LeBron obviously loves playing with him. He's been vocal about that. But the thing that I love about watching THT play is that, especially for a team, and we'll get into this a little bit too, especially for a team, JC, that has this mentality where they think they could just flip the switch. I'm so frustrated by that. But for this team, THT is a guy who's always aggressive. He's always looking to make something happen. Of course, he makes mistakes as a young player and as an aggressive young player. But I love what he brings to the table for this team. His wingspan is obviously well noted. But his ability to drive to the cup, to facilitate the offense, to hit the three-point shot, I think THT brings an element off the bench that the Lakers might not have otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I like the contributions he's been delivering to this team and to the second unit. When he's in there with LeBron and he has no choice but to play off the ball, he does really well with that. When he's been in the offense at times where both LeBron and AD are getting a rest, and so you and Caruso and KCP are in there, and they're not necessarily running the offense. It's basically THT and Kuzma having control of the offense, and he's done pretty well when he's had those moments.
I agree, and I think that's something that we're going to see more of as well, especially as, you know, Vogel continues to experiment with who he can put around LeBron and AD to sort of maximize the skill set. And Caruso is always one of those guys, it feels like. I mean, he is just one of the smartest basketball players. It feels like time and time again we're talking about that. And there was a great tweet. Forgive me because I don't have it queued up and I should have, but that's how it goes sometimes. And there was a great tweet that just sort of illustrated Caruso's presence and his impact, because he was something like a plus 45 or plus 46 in Lakers' losses this year. Something absurd like that, or maybe plus 24 or 25. Regardless, he was a plus in what has been a net minus for the Lakers. So I just thought that was fascinating, especially considering he basically disrupted what could have been a game-winning dunk for the Celtics.
Yeah, I saw that same tweet, and yeah, I don't have it pulled up either, but it is kind of one of those things where, like, people talk about should Caruso play more minutes, and I don't necessarily think that's the case, but, you know, one of my last episodes I did talk about how if you look at Caruso's per 36 numbers, yeah, he jumps off the page, and yeah, maybe he could play more minutes, but I think he's in there when he can make the biggest impact. And so I think if he played more minutes, that might kind of minimize that. But yeah, definitely look at the numbers and see which rotations do, in fact, work more than others.
Kentavious Caldwell-Pope hasn't exactly been lighting it up from downtown over the last handful of games. I think that's one of the reasons why the Lakers have sort of struggled a little bit. They get galvanized when he's hitting shots from outside in particular early and often. So I think that's been something the Lakers have to sort of figure out what's going on with KCP there. I think Kyle Kuzma continues to play well, JC. I really like this sort of mentality that he's sort of seemingly adapted into. The numbers do bear out that he's more engaged, more productive as a starter, but he's continuing to rebound the basketball, move without the ball, and, you know, trying to do things except scoring only when he's coming off the bench. So I appreciate that about him. I want to circle back to Caruso because obviously not only of his impact defensively, but Dennis Schroeder has been struggling a little bit. And while he has his moments in games, especially when he's aggressive and he drives the baskets for what feels like always those and-one opportunities, he has really started to struggle shooting the ball, in particular from downtown, which was something he was doing well to begin the season and something he did well last season. So are you at all concerned about Schroeder's play? And does this allow us to, in any capacity, revisit the Schroeder versus Caruso playing time conversation?
I mean, it does a little bit, especially, you know, consider that Caruso is shooting threes a lot better this year than he was last year. And at the moment, he's shooting a higher percentage than Schroeder is. And yeah, I mean, from the beginning of the season, I liked the idea of Caruso starting and Schroeder coming off the bench, to where you've got a really highly offensively geared second unit. And Schroeder has ended up being a better defensive player than we thought he would be. And so you'd have some defense there in that second unit. But yeah, the starting unit can be a defensive focused starting unit with KCP, Caruso, and Marc Gasol. And then you've got your offense coming from LeBron and AD.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I really like that idea as well. That is something that we discussed, I remember, before the season started. You know, I'd really like to see a little bit more of that Schroeder and Harrell combination. I feel like I'd like to see more of that, with those two guys being prominent sort of assets on the floor in terms of the offensive decision-making and playmaking out there. So maybe it's something that happens regardless of Schroeder giving up his starter's role. I don't think that's a conversation, at least not yet. But playing time can certainly be a different one. I am curious to see how the THT sort of injection impacts the rotational minutes, and whether that means fewer minutes for Caruso over the long term and or for Schroeder, or if that comes more from sort of the KCP Kuzma piece of the pie. Do you feel like that's going to lean one way or the other? Because obviously THT is a multidimensional player. I envision him, you know, being able to be on the floor with Caruso, with Schroeder, with LeBron, you know, pretty much with whomever, so long as they're able to support him in a negative defensive matchup due to height. But, you know, he does a pretty good job of sort of offsetting that because of his wingspan, right? I mean, if he were 2 or 3 inches taller, he would have been a first-round pick, no problem.
Yeah, I think there's definite ways for him to have a bigger impact on the second unit. One of the things that I've seen less of, that I saw a lot of in the start of the season, you know, Montrez isn't really somebody that you're going to call a lot of plays for, but they did seem to run a lot of pick and rolls for him in the first few games of the season. I haven't seen very much of that lately, and it's because the point guards that he's playing aren't really pick and roll point guards the way Schroeder is. That's something I think THT could work on developing. If he can become more of a pick and roll type guy, it expands his ability to run the offense. It expands Trez's ability to have an impact on the second unit and Talen's as well. So yeah, that's one thing I think they could work on.
I think that's an interesting idea. I could certainly subscribe to that. And I feel like, you know, what we saw against the Celtics was THT. I can't remember. My memory is just terrible now that I've aged to 32. Yeah, right. But I can't remember if he was the first man off the bench versus the Celtics. Was he first off the bench?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Right? But regardless, he had that injection into the lineup in the first quarter. So I thought that was particularly interesting as well. He has been coming in ahead of Caruso, which I think is noteworthy. And I think Frank Vogel realizes that, you know, this team sort of needs somebody who can step up on a consistent basis to at least be a threat offensively. And especially on nights or during stretches where KCP isn't feeling his most or isn't being his most productive self on the court, then I feel like THT is especially important. And, you know, speaking of the Lakers needing support around their stars, JC, I feel like for me, this is where, you know, Anthony Davis sort of came out and made a statement against the Celtics. It was nice to see. I feel like I haven't seen dominant, quote-unquote, AD for a while. Obviously, he missed the game against the Pistons, which we won't revisit because, yikes, and I know you talked about it as well, but just what a grotesque contest. But this sort of adductor, quad issue injury, it's been lingering for a while now. If you watch him shoot free throws, which is an area where he struggled, unlike the majority of his career, and in particular last year with the Lakers, and if you watch him shooting threes, it feels like he's not really putting a lot of his lower half into his shot, and I feel like that's part of the reason why he's struggling.
Yeah, I can buy into that. He's seemed to have been making a little bit more of an effort lately to kind of play down low and score that way, but yeah, I mean, that leg could be kind of bothering him.
So, you know, I wonder if the Lakers think that if this is an injury or sort of we won't even call it an injury, but a maintenance situation that requires, let's say, 2 weeks off to heal, can the Lakers afford that luxury becomes a question that they should weigh and weigh carefully. But by the same token, if it's going to be, you know, sit for 2 weeks and it might be better, but, you know, he might aggravate it in the first game back, or it won't be all the way better until the offseason type of thing, then, you know, I think you just have to continue to manage it the best you can and sort of ride it out, because that's where we are in the season and what's obviously a faster season, but an irregular one to say the least. And with LeBron, you know, there was a lot of conversation after the Detroit game about him being quote unquote tired because, you know, he had the huge first half and then, you know, baby second half. I don't really buy into that. I mean, come on, it's LeBron James. And just because he doesn't score 25 or 30 a night doesn't mean he's not impacting the game on a dominant level. That said, I feel like I'm never going to sit here and ding AD and LeBron, but I'd like to see a little bit more oomph from that duo than I'm seeing in the last handful of games.
Yeah, I get that. It's kind of one of those things where I think games are being postponed all over the league. The travel is weird. Like, players aren't allowed to leave their hotel rooms, and so, you know, I've heard some players say they might as well be back in the bubble with as many rules and restrictions as they have on them. And so, yeah, I could see the doldrums of travel kind of getting to everyone a little bit. And Detroit was probably a little bit of playing down to the competition. That happens. But yeah, you definitely would like to see, especially since LeBron's kind of on an MVP track, you don't really want him to lose that pace or that focus.
I mean, and if you're going to make sure that nobody loses pace or focus, you know it's going to be LeBron. And look, he was coming off of a terrific stretch. It's not like LeBron has been awful by any measure this season. I'm just sitting here holding high standards because we've seen what the Lakers are capable of doing. But I really think it's the supporting players more than anything else. I mean, they haven't been able to, you know, sort of rely on that third guy consistently. They've had guys chip in across the board, and or guys have big games that'll help, but nobody on a consistent basis by himself. And two, JC, despite the Lakers' success defensively this season, again, I think some people feel like the rim protection thing is oversold. We've sat here for a while now. We've talked about it's not just the rim protection, but it's the ability to prevent points in the paint. And that's where I feel like the Lakers are really feel that's the missing piece on this team, right? Like that's the clear and obvious thing that this team could really benefit from having.
Yeah, I do think that. I mean, there are times where Marc Gasol, there was a moment in the Boston game where LeBron hit Marc Gasol with a really good pass, and he was just kind of too slow to get the ball up. And yeah, I think having a young and nimble center is going to improve this team defensively, and I think it's just going to open up a few more opportunities for this team in general. I think a young and nimble center is kind of sort of the medicine this team needs.
I feel like, you know, with Marc Gasol, obviously he's toward the end of his career, not that he's retiring tomorrow or even after his contract with the Lakers. He may go on to continue, whether it's with the Lakers or any other team. Marc Gasol is a very smart player. He's smart in terms of team offense and team defense. But individually, he's not exactly a matchup nightmare, especially at this point defensively, because of his inability to move laterally, basically. I mean, his vertical jump is about the same as mine. And I love Marc Gasol. Again, very heady player. I think he's a welcome addition to this team. But just the inability to offer that dynamic in the middle, I feel like is costing the Lakers a little bit in some of these games where they may have come out with a win instead of a loss.
Yeah, like thankfully there's only one Joel Embiid and only one Andre Drummond throughout the league. But, you know, you also do have to worry about, you know, there's a Jokic and there's a Gobert out there. Like, if AD is going to be otherwise occupied with the other team's power forward, or if he's not going to be the center, then you've got an unathletic Gasol and a really short, undersized Montrez. And so, yeah, I think you just need one more piece that's kind of in between the both of those guys to max out this team's defensive capabilities.
And that's sort of where I'm looking toward, right, is the playoffs with, you know, a number of those names that you just mentioned as potential matchups, not so much Drummond, but the others in particular, Jokic and Gobert. So I just feel like if you're the Lakers, that's something that I'm sure Rob Pelinka is already considering. We know he operates, you know, two steps ahead, to say the very least. I'm just not sure what is realistic for this team. So we'll see how that shakes out on the Lakers front. But in terms of the current, I mean, there's no silver bullet coming here, so it's going to have to be, you know, sort of a team-based approach in order to better prevent that, and in particular in the paint. I'm not happy with how many close shots I'm seeing the opposition get off.
Yeah, but since we are talking about potential Lakers move, this is kind of one thing I was going to surprise you with, this article I came across, just to kind of see your thoughts on it. As NBA stories tend to go, when there's smoke, there tends to be a little bit of fire, and so you're starting to hear, very early before the trading deadline, these murmurs about a Bradley Beal. And so, you know, in that I came across this article where there are two semi-realistic packages in which a Bradley Beal is gettable. But, I mean, the cost is obviously really high. And so these are the two packages I kind of wanted your thoughts on. And this is a Clutch Points article, so it's not like, you know, they're more reliable than Heavy. But, you know, it is what it is. So they proposed there's a package of KCP, Kuzma, THT, and two future firsts for Bradley Beal.
KCP, Kuzma, THT, two future firsts.
Yeah.
It's not like I'd have to sit there and really, really, really analyze it, but that sounds like the right sort of ask, right? Like when I was on with Adam earlier when we were doing the Waiver Wire show today, and if you're listening to this podcast and you're not a premium HoopBall subscriber, I don't know what you're doing, but change that. Get on us with the Waiver Wire show, Fantasy Hoops, every Sunday. So we were sitting there taping. We were talking about Bradley Beal earlier, so it's funny you bring this up. And I said, you know, I feel like Michael Porter Jr. is more valuable to the Nuggets in a trade than he is on the court. And I know that's a bold take, right? So then I said, how about you start a package, if you're the Nuggets, with Michael Porter Jr., Gary Harris, Paul Millsap, two future first round picks for Bradley Beal. Then you have Murray, Beal, and Jokic. Right? So it's not the same deal, but it's similar in terms of its structure, right? Three players, two first round picks, and you get out of some money in the process to take on Beal's money. So I feel like that's the right value on the deal. Obviously, if you have Beal, you don't need KCP as good as he's been. God bless, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kuzma, you know, is going to be a piece in any potential trade the Lakers make on that sort of impact level. Giving up THT would hurt, but if you're giving me Bradley Beal, you hope THT becomes offensively, what, 80% of Bradley Beal? Defensively, he probably has maybe a little bit of a higher ceiling due to his length, but Lakers aren't going to use their first-round picks in this immediate LeBron AD window, not that they have many of them going forward. At some point, they're going to need the picks to do something, but it's just you're deferring out that cost so far. Bradley Beal's in his prime. AD's in his prime. I mean, who knows what the future holds for the Lakers? You know this pattern can continue. This is how the Lakers have traditionally built up, right, is through trade more recently, whether it's the Pau Gasol trade going back about a decade or more recently bringing in LeBron as a free agent and then the AD trade. So, mm-hmm. you know, the opportunities are always going to exist. So, yeah, I mean, look, if you're telling me I could get Bradley Beal with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, I mean, it's really hard to say no to that.
Yeah, and like in this package, I look at what's left, and obviously there's Schroeder, Montrez, Caruso, and then if you're going to end up giving playing time to Kostas or Kaycock, that's available too. Plus, there's still Wesley Matthews and Markieff, obviously.
You got Alphonso McKinney too. Don't forget.
I think the biggest piece that would hurt, future long term is obviously THT. But yeah, I mean, this seems like a fair price from the Lakers' end. I don't really know how fair the Wizards would take it, but if the Wizards are kind of in the place where, I mean, I think this is probably one of the better packages you could get overall in terms of it's basically five pieces for one. The other piece, I think, it's similar. It's KCP, Kuzma, and Dennis Schroeder, three firsts, and Quinn Cook.
Oh, well, Quinn Cook's a deal breaker for me, to be honest. No, I mean, that's interesting that you basically sub out a first to keep THT but include Schroeder instead, right?
Yeah.
So would you rather keep Schroeder and extend him, or do you want to keep THT, extend him, and keep a first? To me, Or you give up an extra first, excuse me. I mean, for me, I feel like, whew, that's a tough call. What would you do?
I'm looking at it from the Wizards' perspective because I feel like they're the ones with the most leverage. Like, I don't see how they would want anything less than, like, for the starting point for Wizards has to be KCP and THT, and then let's go from there. Like, Schroeder's great, but I think the Wizards would have to, no matter what, have both KCP and THT, or Kuzma and THT.
Yeah, I feel like you're right. I feel like there's no way they even consider that deal without THT at this point. And if the Lakers could keep THT, I'd probably be willing to throw in that third first round pick with some level of protection, right? Even if it's a sham protection, like one through three protected, otherwise it's unprotected, or some nightmare scenario like that, right?
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, if you could keep THT and add Bradley Beal, man, I mean, come on. You could have Caruso in the starting lineup or Caruso off the bench, and you could put THT in the starting lineup. I mean, any sort of trade that allows the Lakers to land Bradley Beal is going to upgrade the team. I mean, I don't care how they have to fill in the parts. That's just a player that they don't have. I mean, that they haven't had, you know, really at that position since Kobe. I mean, mm-hmm. in terms of effectiveness of the shooting guard spot. So
yeah, and I think the advantage of a move like this is it does also leave open roster spots. So once the buyout market does hit, then you don't have to worry about waiving like a Quinn Cook to get somebody from the buyout market.
Right. I mean. Yeah, I mean, it allows you some of that additional roster flexibility, not necessarily by design, but sort of as a result. So, you know, it's fun to dream about. I still, you know, I hear Bradley Beal saying, I don't want to be traded. I hear the Wizards saying, I ain't trading him. But you know how we do it in the NBA. And you know, I obviously anything is possible. You know, the Wizards have to consider everything and anything at this point. Like, if they think they're building something around Russ and Beal, I mean, good luck to them. But I feel like it's going to take some sort of godfather offer that, you know, everybody just jaw drops and goes, wow, really, all of that? Because it'll be more than the it'll be like, you know, more than the Paul George trade or something just absolutely crazy like that, right? So, you know, I personally like to dream about, you know, as much as I would love Beal on the Lakers, right? Like, I feel like that's a player the Bucks should have been, like, all in on 2 years ago, right? Because that would just be, I think, phenomenal for them. But he would really be phenomenal on any team. Let's be real. He's a superstar.
Yeah. And I mean, depending on how things do turn out, I do think this offseason there's players available. Like, I keep tweeting about it kind of as a joke, but I also think it could happen. I think DeMar could be a Laker next year as a free agent. Like,
I don't think that's an impossibility at all. Look, I don't think he's necessarily – you know he's taking a pay cut, right? Nobody's signing him at, like, $25 million a year. At least I don't think. And but you know, who knows, because we all saw the Mason Plumlee contract.
Yeah.
That said, you know, for me, I think that's a scenario he's definitely got to have at least some level of interest in, because, you know, it's his hometown team and all of that. What type of pay cut he would be willing to take to make it happen, that's totally up to him. But I don't think, you know, his wallet ain't exactly stretched thin after the enjoyable NBA career he's had. And, you know, think about DeRozan for a second, man. It's so funny you bring him up, because not like just about a week ago I was having this thought. I remember when I believe it was Brian Colangelo who initially extended DeRozan off of his rookie deal, and it was something like 4 years, $40 million, 4 years, $42 million, something around there. And it was like pretty criticized at that time. It was like, wow, really? $10 million a year for DeMar DeRozan? Like, do we even know what he is as an NBA player? Da 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 da. So it's just like interesting to think about, and just a good reminder that we're all prisoners in the moment sometimes, and you know, you try to really do your best to think about that they're paying, any team is paying for, you know, skills to be provided, not skills provided in the past tense.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's interesting, man. And as for the Lakers, you know, I think for me, the thing that I want to see from them moving forward is just that level of effort, man. And that's something that we've talked about, and I'm sure we'll continue to talk about, is just the consistency behind it. And I don't care who's on the schedule, who the opponent is. Of course, the Lakers aren't going to win every game, but just I want them, like anyone should, to play a consistent level of basketball that puts their best effort every single night, because that's the mentality they have to be in. And, you know, you go with a sideways stretch for a week or two in the Western Conference, all of a sudden you can find yourself in the middle of the pack, and it's a weird place to be this year.
Yeah, like I look at their standings every time I solo record, and I'm just like, I don't see how Dallas can get out of this hole that they're in. Like, I expect them to be a playoff team, but that's a hard hole to dig out of.
Right, and we're like 20 games into the year, right? So I know we're past the quarterway point, but we're already making projections. Like, man, I don't see how it happens, you know? So it's just crazy to me how fast the season unfolds, despite the fact that it's obviously going to be over several months. And look, we would be incomplete on this episode without mentioning that the Lakers have had the good fortune of basically being very healthy and very injury-free for the most part for the majority of the season. They've dealt with a few injuries here and there. Alex Caruso missed some time with health and safety protocols, but outside of that, the Lakers have been clean, for lack of a better word. And you know, that's really hurt some teams. Obviously, Miami, Washington being prime examples of that. Memphis with a bunch of games postponed. But Lakers have been clean in that department. And I think that's something that, you know, in theory at least, has helped their ability to gel early on, and why we've seen some of the good early season success that we had. Sort of to end on a positive note here.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So until next time, this is the Hoopball Lakers podcast. JC, you can follow him on Twitter at JCDeLeon1. I'm at Ethan_Noroff, N-O-R-O-F. Follow our show at Hoopball Lakers for all our musings, in-game tweets, entertainment. You already know what it is. The whole Hoopball family at Hoopball Fantasy, at Hoopball Tweets. And until next time, Lakerland, we out.
This has been a Hoop Ball presentation.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.